Okay, this is Joe Broadhurst. You're listening to CKUT Radio in Montreal, Quebec, 90.3 FM. I am pleased to be joined on the phone with Eric Margolis. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing today?
Just fine, thank you.
You have a beautiful day down in Toronto.
So I'm told.
Yeah, you got to get out and spend more time out there.
Thank you. I haven't been allowed away from my desk all day. That's why I'm being tentative with my comments.
Ah, okay. Eric Margolis is an esteemed reporter. You have been a columnist for many, many newspapers. You are currently a contributor for Sun Media and Dawn in Pakistan.
And a number of newspapers in the Middle East.
Right. Can you just give our listeners a little bit of background of your background as being a reporter?
Well, I'm what's politely called a veteran reporter with over 25 years of experience specializing in international affairs, wars, espionage, revolutions, terrorism, as it's called today. And I've specialized in the Middle East, South Asia, that's India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, wars in Africa, North Asia to an extent, a little in South America and a lot in Europe. And I write for, as you said, many newspapers. I'm author of a book called War at the Top of the World, The Struggle for Afghanistan and Asia. I've written many magazine articles. I do a lot of radio. I broadcast for CNN and Fox and CBC and CTV, et cetera, et cetera. And I've just started on a new book project.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Or?
Yeah, sure. It's with pleasure. It's my newest offspring. I'm still working on it. It's called Dinner with Papa Doc, Camping with Gaddafi, and Other Adventures in the Third World.
Wow.
And it's 10 chapters of various hair-raising, death-defying, and sometimes amusing, sometimes scary adventures that I've had covering the world over these 25 years.
And you've covered it well. I was very intrigued by an article that you wrote. Here in Canada, we don't seem to be having much of a debate about Canada's role in Afghanistan. And you recently wrote an article called Canada, Get Out of Afghanistan. From your position, and it's from a good position, you've been over there, you know the territory, you know what people are thinking over there. What is Canada's role in Afghanistan right now? Why are we there?
Well, I can only guess that Canada's there because the U.S. put a lot of tremendous amount of pressure on Canada. And, you know, over 80% of Canada's exports go to the U.S., so the U.S. has great leverage. And the U.S. said to Canada and some of its other allies, either send troops to help us out in Afghanistan or send them to Iraq. And NATO, most of its NATO partners, quickly chose Afghanistan as what they thought was the lesser of two evils. Also, I would say that the new Canadian Prime Minister, Mr. Harper, is probably ideologically in favor of this operation and of supporting the American presence there. After all, he did some time ago urge the Canadian troops be sent to Iraq. So he's consistent with his thinking.
In your article, you state that possibly Canada could be playing a role in securing a path for an oil pipeline. Is that something that you feel is could be happening for real?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Much of this whole mess in Afghanistan has to do with oil, not with oil, but oil routes for the pipeline. And, you know, the Taliban, who are now villainized and demonized everywhere, were being given millions of dollars in aid by the U.S. government until 4 months before the 9/11 attacks. And the reason for this was that the U.S. was trying to get the Taliban to approve a U.S. oil company to build an oil pipeline from Uzbekistan south through Afghanistan to the Pakistani coast. Very important, vital pipeline for extracting Central Asian oil. When, after Taliban gave the contract to an Argentinian company, suddenly the U.S. broke off relations, and from then on the Taliban became more or less outlaws. So So, yes, oil has a lot to do. And if you look at the U.S. military bases in Afghanistan, they more or less follow the proposed pipeline route. And the Canadians are at the southern end of this route.
The Taliban actually, it's demonized, like you said, right now. But really, it and as your article says, it's basically an anti-communist organization. Is that correct?
That is correct. The Taliban were formed in 1990, 1991. I was there. I saw it firsthand. They were almost they were created out of a group of religious students and armed by Pakistan, and they were created to stop the chaos caused in Afghanistan by its raging civil war, by the mass rape of women in Afghanistan. They were to protect women's rights and to bring law and order, which they did. It was a very draconian, harsh, primitive law and order of the most backwards kind of mountain law that was imposed by the Taliban, but really not tremendously different from the practices followed by the other tribes in Afghanistan. But after crushing disorder in Afghanistan, its primary mission was fighting the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, which was the rump of the old Afghan Communist Party, which was being supported by Russia and by Iran. Today, this Northern Alliance has become part of the Karzai government as the power behind the throne, and we have the anomaly or the curious, ironic picture of the U.S. allied with the old Afghan communist against its old allies of the Mujahideen who were fighting the communists.
And the Taliban, actually, I think the word Taliban, doesn't that stand for religious students?
A talib is a religious seminarian. Taliban is the plural.
Okay. In 2001, at the beginning of 2001, the U.S. had asked the Taliban to hand over Osama bin Laden, but they refused to provide proof of any guilt regarding that request. Can you just tell my listeners a little bit about how that process happened and what happened afterwards?
Yes. I am completely, as sure as I can be that the Taliban leadership knew nothing about al-Qaeda's plans regarding 9/11. I'm still not 100% sure that Osama bin Laden was behind the attack. We've never seen any proof to indicate this, though we've had a lot of circumstantial evidence and some comments attributed to him that indicate that he was. But they certainly didn't know what he was cooking. It was a very secret operation, and it was mounted out of Western Europe, not out of Afghanistan. Anyway, at the time, this is before 9/11, Osama bin Laden was a national hero in Afghanistan. He had spent all of his wealth as a Saudi millionaire to come and help fight the communists in Afghanistan. He had been wounded 6 times in battle. He played a very important role in constructing shelters and tunnels for the Mujahideen forces. He was revered in Afghanistan. He was almost regarded as a saintly person. And when the U.S. demanded that he be handed over, the Taliban leadership followed an hallowed Afghan tradition, and that is that you have to defend your guest with your life if necessary. Guests are sacred. And the Taliban said, no, we will not hand him over, only if you show us, send us a dossier with proof of his involvement, and then we will hand him over to an independent international tribunal. In other words, what they were asking for was a normal extradition request under international law and the right to go to an international body for judgment. Colin Powell promised, as he was Secretary of State, to produce a dossier, a white paper filled with the evidence of bin Laden's guilt. But in fact, this was never done and has never been done to this date. But the Taliban, being rough mountaineers and men who considered honor more important than anything else, refused to bow to American threats, and they saw their government and their lives destroyed as a result of it.
Can you talk a little bit about the Afghani people and how they actually feel about Canada being there? Because I wonder if most Canadians have an idea of what the people in Afghanistan actually think about Canadians being there?
Well, we are not getting a good view, and the reason is that same reason Americans have a poor understanding of the area. We have all the Johnny-come-latelys from the Canadian media who are falling all over themselves to rush to Afghanistan. This is the hot news story, to be in Kabul and Kandahar and report back breathless stories. So our media has just discovered Afghanistan, and all our media luminaries have now rushed over there and are reporting back. But what they're seeing Afghanistan through a straw. And what they're seeing is what they're being guided to and what they're being told by their handlers in the Canadian or American military, because there are no independent journalists wandering around in Afghanistan anymore, or very few. They're all controlled by the U.S. military. So they're getting a very, very biased view. And so these Canadian journalists are being presented to little Afghan children who have been coached, to Afghan elders who have been bribed or coached to say what nice things, or to people who will say nice things. They are not out in the fields or in the mountains talking to your average Pashtun tribesman. What the tribesmen think there is that Afghans have been famous since the time of Alexander the Great for not liking foreigners or for being xenophobic. And Canadians are regarded as just the latest foreign invaders who've come to the area. They are enemies. They're also a source of money, so they're to be exploited. But eventually they are to be driven out. And history in Afghanistan shows that the longer foreign occupiers stay, the more they become hated and the more they become targets.
I want to speak a little bit about that history that you were just speaking of, because in a past article, you had talked about the history of Canada and colonialism. Can you just speak a little bit about that and how that worked out in the past?
In my last Sunday's column in the Sun, in the Sun Chain, I drew an analogy which I thought was very appropriate to the fact that at the end of the 19th century, Canadian troops were brought from Canada to South Africa as part of an imperial British force to subdue the rebellious Boer farmers in South Africa who were resisting being taken over and being merged into the British Empire. And some 200-odd Canadian soldiers died in this battle. They're completely forgotten, but I thought the analogy was appropriate that Canadian troops, again, a small number of Canadian troops, once again have been drafted into a giant imperial mission, and the imperial mission is obviously the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan with its allies, and that Canadians will once again pay the price for being on an imperial colonial mission.
Well, what exactly do you think can come out of Canada being in Afghanistan?
Nothing positive in my view. Canadians are being sold a bill of goods. It's truly distressing to see Canadian politicians aping the same statements as their American counterparts, which are compendiums of untruths, using the same lines, the same platitudes like stay the course and we won't cut and run. It's embarrassing. Canadians should at least be able to come up with their own platitudes. Third, to see Canada's Canadians being told that they're there to fight terrorism, which is not the case, that they're there for women's rights, which is ridiculous, and they're there to help rebuild Afghanistan, which is nonsense because the Afghans don't want them there.
So do you believe that there's any direct commercial interest for Canada being there?
I believe so. The other NATO members are sniffing around at the oil business there. It just so happens that former Prime Minister Chrétien is just north of there right now, having signed some important oil deals. I think it was his oil or gas deals with Turkmenistan. Canadian companies are moving up into that area just north of Afghanistan in the Caspian Basin. And yes, of course, there's some commercial interest in there. And the U.S. has made clear to its NATO allies that if they want a slice of the Great Caspian Basin energy pie, the Antichrist is going to be sending soldiers. That's why the French are there, too.
So we're probably going to expect a lot of casualties coming out of this. I know we only have 2,600 troops over there, but how many people have to die, do you think, before Canadians stand up and say, hey, this is ridiculous?
Well, I don't think we'll have a heavy number of casualties, but proportionately, I suppose, you know, by the time they get to over 100 casualties, people are going to start complaining. I mean, I already see from my daily reader mail, I've had a ton of angry reader mail from people right across the country, left, right, all groups, feeling they've been deceived and the subject has not been discussed, and they're mad as hornets about it already.
So could this be a thorn for Harper as far as being able to pass things in the future?
Yes, I will predict here on your show that one day soon Harper will rue the day that he got involved in Afghanistan and associated his name so closely with this mission, which is bound to eventually end in failure for the United States and its allies.
Okay, I thank you for joining me. I've been joined by Eric Margolis. You can find him at ericmargolis.com, as well as in numerous papers around the world, as well as in Canada. I do thank you for joining me and for making that prediction on this show.
You're most welcome.
Okay, well, you have a nice afternoon.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.